Law Focus Podcast. Bringing you the facts, handing you your rights. This is Law Focus.
Good evening, everyone. Good evening to you listeners out there. Thank you for tuning into our program. It's exactly 2 minutes past seven, and you tune into Vow FM. We're broadcasting on 88.1. My name is Tsepo Mohapi, and today is the Law Focus. Now, our show, the Law Focus, is aimed at dealing with legal issues, and our objective is to inform you and give you some information about your legal rights as the listener. While we're discussing it, and we're trying to make sense of current and very important sort of legal topics that we are faced with today as a country and as a society. At the moment, I mean, it's the 3rd of September, and already September feels like it's been a very long month. I mean, the things that are going on right now in South Africa, we've been hit by an outbreak of attacks on migrants from other African countries. A spate of violence has broken out in the suburbs, the southern suburbs of Johannesburg, the central business districts of Pretoria and Johannesburg. More than 50 shops owned both locally and by foreign nationals have been looted and destroyed. And people have been reportedly attacked, injured, cars have been torched, and widespread looting. People somewhat taking what they want, where they want, in the name of a protest march. In the midst of this chaos, the Gauteng Premier Makura has warned that he will not hesitate to deploy the army to areas in the province plagued by xenophobic attacks and looting. He made these comments earlier today in the township of Alexandra, which is a little bit north of here. And in that township, that's Alex, there was looting and rioting carrying on today. I don't like to call it protest marches because this is not a protest, this is rioting. And even some stores were set alight again. Now, as if that, the xenophobic attacks, the rioting, the looting isn't enough. On top of that, we have got, you know, what can only be called femicide, the systematic murdering of women and children. The country is reeling in shock after the brutal rape and killing of a UCT student, Uyinene Mkhwetwa, on Friday at a post office. The murder of a famous boxer, up-and-coming boxer, Leandre Yechels. She was shot by her boyfriend, who was a policeman. He subsequently died from injuries sustained in the motor collision while he was being chased. Now, all these events beg the question, should the South African government declare gender-based violence a state of emergency? It's a real issue now. It's not something that we can really run away from or even pretend it doesn't happen in front of us. It's happening here and now. I mean, we're seeing it all the time. Just remember, you tuned into Law Focus on Vow FM 88.1. I'm Tsepo Mohapi, and I'll be hosting you tonight. Don't forget to follow us on Twitter and keep the conversation going. You can use the hashtag LawFocus. It's at VowFM. That's the hashtag LawFocus. And our podcasts are available at eino.fm. Let's take a look now at what's been happening through the week in our voxes.
Listening to Law Focus? Connect with VowFM 88.1 on Twitter and Facebook. Be your own lawyer.
Yeah, definitely. It should be made an emergency. It should have been a state of emergency like a while ago. I don't know why we had to wait for more deaths and more violence in order for us to like realize that like women aren't safe in this country, like we're not. And if we can come up with like tangible solutions that are actually going to help and it's not just going to be like things in the air, then that would just be great. You know, like you want to feel safe when you leave your house as a girl, like you want to know and be sure that I'm going to leave and I'm going to come back. So if this state of emergency is kind of going to help society treat women with more respect and, you know, why not? So, yeah, definitely it should be a state of emergency. It's been a state of emergency. So at least, you know, it's being declared one, or it should be declared one. Quite soon.
Gender-based violence definitely has to be declared a state of emergency, and the country needs to look into not protecting perpetrators so much, because as far as the systems that have been placed are looking far, they are not really protecting victims, rather they are protecting perpetrators. So I believe that there should be harsher laws, and we should stop caring about the human rights of people who don't have any work for women. You understand? There should be harsher laws. They should carry heavier sentences with more extreme consequences. If, let's say, if the DNA evidence found, say, rape kit, and like DNA evidence be like 99.99% sure, then there should be like a solid confinement.
I think South Africa should declare a state of emergency for gender-based violence, because it is every day to find that women and children actually being affected by issues of rape and murder. Every day, every month actually should always be a women's month. We should always focus on women's issue only in all because it's women's month. Every day should be a day for us to recognize, discuss, and to find means, ways to combat issues of gender violence. It is not fair that potential young people who have potential to change their lives, potential to do something different, to make a difference in their communities, have to be affected by issues of gender-based violence.
Every day a woman is raped, a woman is killed by her partner, her uncle, some random stranger. It has to end. I mean, how many more women? Uyinene, Karabo, so many have been burnt alive. So many have fallen at the hands of men, and these men live amongst us. You know, it is the most craziest thing a woman can do is walk down the street. The craziest thing you can do is be in a public space alone. You can't wear miniskirts, you can't wear short because some man feels entitled to your body. No, it has to end.
Yeah, that was kind of some really touching stuff. That's how you, our listeners, feel about whether gender-based violence should be declared a state of emergency. And some of those voice notes were really heart-tugging, because you can feel, you can hear the fear, the discomfort, the absolute terror at some stages in people's voice for simple things like walking down the street. Now, to further discuss this with us, we've invited Ms. Nonhlanhla Skhosana from the Sonke Justice Center to help us. Let's unpack this topic and really the things that are going on in our country. Remember that you can join our conversation at VowFM. That's on Twitter, at VowFM, using the hashtag LawFocus. Also the hashtag VowFM, VowTurns9, normal spelling for all of them. Let's get straight to it now. Hello, Ms. Skhosana. Hello.
Evening to your listeners. Gender Justice, not Sonke Gender Center.
Oh, I beg your pardon?
Okay. Sonke Gender Justice.
Sonke Gender, my apologies. Sorry, I had written that down, actually. I don't know why I said it the wrong way. Yeah, but okay. It is now Sonke Gender Justice. Yeah. Thank you for joining us. You're speaking to Tsepo Mohapi. Over the last 24 hours, we've been really rocked by the things that have been happening in South Africa. We have, I think, 5 women who have been reported murdered, and a little girl who was kidnapped and then thrown out into the middle of the street in the night. Do you think the country is responding adequately or appropriately to the real dire situation that we're faced with?
We're still not happy about the manner in which the government is responding to gender-based violence in this country, because one, we've engaged the government for the past 5 years, that we need a national strategic plan as a country, but also we don't just need a national strategic plan. We need it to be costed and funded. So what the commitment that we got from government is to appoint the steering committee that will work on the NSP after the gender-based violence summit. But then we haven't had any commitment regarding the finances that needs to make sure that this national strategic plan is working, because we know that as a country, the KPMG report told us that this country is spending more than 42 billion rands per year in trying to deal with gender-based violence. So we are saying we need to make sure that these resources are used in a manner that would benefit the survivors, of which at the present moment it doesn't do that.
When you speak about finances, is this a lot of money that we're asking for to enable us to deal with this issue? What kind of figures are we talking?
We're talking, because that is why we say this NSP needs to be costed, and it needs to be funded. When we can start costing it, then we would know how much that we definitely need as a country, and compared to what we are spending, the belief is we might need lesser than what we are spending as a country.
At the moment.
But also what is more critical is where and how. What are the results of using the money? We see at the present moment that we don't see positive results. We see this challenge of gender-based violence, you know, it becomes worse and worse, and survivors are not getting services. We have what we call the Tuchuzela care centers, which are one-stop facilities for survivors of gender-based violence and domestic violence. Mm. Those centers, as I'm speaking to you, some of them are closing down, some of them are under-resourced, and what does that say to us? It says we are not victim, our approach is not victim-centered.
Yes.
We don't really provide survivors what they need.
Mm.
But also, we're not having funding programs that are trying to prevent gender-based violence rather than just responding to it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, I hear you. And now, femicide and gender-based violence, and I don't mean to be insensitive when I ask this, but in South Africa, it really isn't new. It's tragic. It really is. But it is something that happens every single day in this country. At the moment, yes, it's taking a great deal of prominence and center stage, and it should. But it does happen every day. We're only 3 days outside of August, which is Women's Month, and we still have these sort of outrageous things happening. Where is it that it doesn't feel as though we are moving in a direction that is positive? Do you think you could explain why? Where are we deficient as a society now?
I think, you know, we really need to deal with the root causes of gender-based violence. How we socialize our boys, how our men, the men in the world, in fact. Because this is not just a South African problem.
Yeah.
As much as we've got the high rate of homicide in this country, which is 5 times the global average, the way we
as much as that, 5 times the global average.
Yes.
Okay.
So the way boys are socialized, and in a manner that they are socialized as if they are superior than women.
Mm.
You know, there are people who have power over the bodies of women. They can decide, they can police the women's bodies. And that also talks to the manner in which, as a country, we use violence. Because the researchers are giving us reports that, you know, the chances of a person who is growing around the violent area, chances that that person could be violent in future are very high.
Yeah.
So we need to deal with these issues at the family level. You know, families...
You mean when people are being raised, when
yes.
young men are growing up on that level?
Yes. And also, you know, to call it out when it happens in the family, we know that most of the sexual violence against women and children are happening in our own homes.
Yes.
You know, we know that we've got cases of uncles, of brothers, of grandfathers who are sexually abusing young women in that space. We know the level of HIV in our country among adolescents. And the research shows that those young women are being sexually violated by older men, because I cannot say they're having sex with them, but they're sexually violated by older men. And
yeah.
What are we saying as families? We are quiet. We don't want to put...
our dirty linen.
And then as communities, we protect the perpetrators. And every time when there is these cases, most people who are being talked about, who are being named, are survivors but not perpetrators.
That's true. In your experience, I don't need you to pull out any stats or anything like that, but in your experience, does class or income affect, because there's this idea that sort of this is more of a rural problem, this is more of a township problem, this is more of a poor problem than it is an educated, urban, wealthy problem. I'm talking about gender-based violence and femicide. Is there any truth to that myth? Because a lot of people will somehow consign it to the rural areas or to the township or to the poor areas. Is there any correlation between the propensity towards violence and those factors?
Gender-based violence cuts across. We heard during the funeral of the doctor, who she was a businesswoman, and her sister saying, you know, she was physically abused by the husband, as educated as she was.
Yes, this is 2 weeks ago you're talking about, hey?
Yes.
Yes, yes.
But the reality is, those who are more vulnerable are the poor, are the ones who don't have access to services. Because, you know, if you're in urban areas, you've got access to the police, but when you're in rural areas, how far is the police station?
Yeah, no,
so the perpetrators know very well that I can go and, you know, go and manage to do this, but also survive at the end of the day. I would never be caught as a perpetrator. Chances that I could go to jail are very minimal. But also, in terms of the culture, to say if it is something that is happening within the family or within the marriage,
yes,
it takes much time for a woman in rural areas to report that case or even to talk about it. But in areas where services are available, support is available, these things are talked about and called out on a day-to-day basis, it's easy for them to report. So maybe that is why it seems as if it is more worse in areas where people are poor and they are vulnerable,
yes,
because they of lack of services and lack of support.
Right. But the reality is this happens in Sandton, it happens in Soshanguve, it happens everywhere.
It happens in the U.S., it happens in Australia.
Yeah.
For the fact that we have very prominent women who came out in more especially the hashtag MeToo campaign, where they came out being sexually violated,
yes,
by a senior person in the country, and this is what is happening. So it cuts across.
Yeah, no, that's true. And now, when we are in South Africa, we often have this sort of reaction to a scenario, and it's almost knee-jerk. For instance, we have a petition that has been signed to get the death penalty back, and I think the target was about 300,000, and it's over 250,000 now. And it's a display of the extent to which people are frustrated with the system, they're frustrated with law enforcement, they're frustrated with the courts. And they're saying, but perhaps the death penalty should be brought back. But this is a conversation we always have when there's a violent act, there's a violent murder, there's a violent rape. This is what always happens. Do you think these kinds of efforts are helpful? Do you think they will be fruitful in the long term dealing with the issues?
I think it's important that when you try to resolve a challenge or a problem, you don't create another one. We know what happened previously in our country when death sentence was still existing. You know, innocent people would die and you could not reverse it. And remember, in this space, we're talking around issues of preventing violence. So we cannot promote violence against other human beings. And more especially, we know what our constitution is all about. So if we need to have solutions, we need to have solutions that will be long-lasting, that will never have a negative impact in our communities. We need to have solutions that, you know, we know for sure that they would give us positive results in dealing with this issue. Coming together as a community in South Africa is very important. It is very important that we sign petition and engage the government. It is unfortunate that our government doesn't want to listen. And what worries most is the fact that it seems as if they are living in another world. Now recently, the Minister of Women was talking about what kind of services they are providing, you know,
yes,
which are there, but the reality is survivors are not happy about those services.
Are they accessible?
Evaluate them.
Yeah.
Even if they're accessible, is it the quality of services that survivors are supposed to get. Because when you say to me there's a police station, I have to go open a case, and then I'll go there to open a case, then I'm secondarily victimized by the same police person. You know,
yeah.
So issues of the quality of services that is provided to us as South Africans, it's very important. Yes, they are putting a lot of resources into it. They are training police on these issues of gender-based violence. If they can tell you how many courses they've undergone, there's so much. But the attitude,
the attitude
is a serious problem, because the attitude of our police, some of the social workers and other officers, even nurses themselves and doctors, it is a big challenge.
Right. Now, if you just joined us, you're listening to VAL FM 88.1, you're listening to Tap Map, and we're talking about gender-based violence and femicide. Speaking to Ms. Skosana from Sonke Gender Justice. Ms. Skosana, before I let you go, I have a strong opinion, but I think I'll reserve it for a little bit later in the show. I don't know if I told you I'm a practicing attorney, so I'm in court quite often. And I want to know, in your experience, whether you believe the court system, in your experience, has it been a useful ally in the fight against gender-based violence, or has it been a stumbling block?
We've seen a slight change during the past few years, even, you know, this year, regarding how they deal with cases of gender-based violence. We've seen, you know, some positive results, but there is still some gap in that. But also, you know, just talking to courts only, it's important, but we've got the critical, the whole thing, our investigating officers, because they're the ones who are gathering evidence, they're the ones who are engaging with the perpetrators and the survivors. And if their cases are not strong enough to go to court, and even if they are in those courts, but they are not strong enough, so, you know, the survivors, they're not going to get justice. So it becomes a bit difficult when you sit in those courts and you listen, you know, in terms of the evidence that is put across to the judge. It puts this judge in a very challenging space, you know, to make a decision. But also working with the prosecutors is very important, that, you know, we wish they could also do their job. They need to be able to engage with the survivors and their families, because if they don't, then it becomes a problem. And we know that the NPA has an obligation to make sure that these cases are dealt with in a very correct way. But we're saying we see a bit of a change, but there is still a lot to be done.
Yeah. Okay. No, I agree with you. Thank you very much. I appreciate the topic, even though the topic is not a pleasant one. It's one that needs to be discussed. It's a conversation that we need to have over and over and over again until we start to make some sense of this situation.
And we would appreciate if men can just stop raping and killing women, because if they can just stop it, we could save a lot of resources. We wouldn't have, you know, this kind of a challenge. And then men must really, you know, take the responsibility and stop blaming the survivors and the victim, because most of the time you would find out they would ask, why was she there? Women must try to work together. Women must try to be in the safe space.
Yeah.
We cannot live our lives like that. If they can just stop doing it, everything would be fine for us.
Yeah, I mean, one of our Voxy speakers indicated that, you know, walking down the road is hazardous. And as a man, I can tell you, I've never felt that walking down the road is hazardous. I can walk in Bromfontein at 11 o'clock. What I might get mugged, but not because I'm a man. I'll get mugged because maybe I've got a nice phone, but I won't get mugged because I'm a man. And that's a very, very scary thought. It really is. But we really appreciate your coming to speak to us today. How can people who'd like to get involved, people who'd like to perhaps make contact with you, how can they do so and where?
They can go to www.genderjustice.org.za. They'll get all the social platforms that Sonke is involved in, and our contacts in our different offices.
So it's genderjustice.org.za, is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you very much. And
thank
we
you
hope
so much
that you continue all of the good work. I know it's going to be a tough one, but good luck with the work.
No, thank you so much.
Right, that was Mrs. Kosana from Sonke Gender Justice, bringing up a lot of things that really are worrying in this country. I just wanted to maybe just go back to the topic of the death penalty, just for a couple of seconds. Because while we say bring back the death penalty, I think people have perhaps, and I'm not saying death penalty is right or wrong, I'll reserve my own views on that, but the effectiveness of the death penalty is still dependent on the effectiveness of the rest of the justice system. I don't think we should forget about that. So the perpetrator still needs to be arrested, investigated, charged, put on trial, convicted, before the death penalty even becomes a factor. At sentencing, it only becomes a factor. If the system is broken throughout that whole process, that 5 or 6 steps that I mentioned prior, you can forget about the death penalty being effective because you'll never get to the point where the man is even facing the death penalty. So I think maybe South Africans need to kind of think more along the lines of how do we prevent this, rather than trying to say, but okay, if you do this, you may lose your life. Sure, but that's if he's caught, and then if he's charged, and then if he's investigated, and then if he's tried and convicted, and then sentenced to death, though that might apply. So perhaps that should be in our minds as well about the rest of the system and how it should or shouldn't apply. Remember, you are here with me, Tsap Mapi, and it's at Vow FM on Twitter, and you can use the hashtag LawFocus and hashtag VowTurns9. We're going to go through to our next callers soon. But before that, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be back now.
LawFocus on VolFam 88.1. Point of information.
So it's 7:30 and we're back on LawFocus at Vow FM. And we're still discussing the really, really impertinent question of femicide and gender-based violence. It's all over the news today. It's all over the social media, and it's really come into the focus, as it should. Perhaps we haven't been paying enough attention to it, and it's taken a few, not just a few, half a dozen real tragedies perpetrated against women that we know of. I mean, the ones that are making the news, it's 6 of them or 5 or 6 of them. Of course, there are dozens more that have happened, but those are the 6 that have really brought it into focus during the course of the last couple of days. So to join me, I'm going to have two attorneys or lawyers with me. And the first one is Gretchen Sudeni. She's a lawyer and an activist. She was part of Total Shutdown last year, which was a movement. The other one is William Sakhecha. He's also a lawyer. And I'd like to welcome both of them onto the show. Hello, Gretchen.
Good evening, Tipo, and thank you for having me on the show. And good evening to your listeners.
Thank you very much. Hello, William.
Good evening, Mr. Mahapir. How are you?
I'm fine. And Zappo. Oh, Tsepo will do fine. It's not Tsepo.
All right.
Yes, thanks. All right. So, I mean, this week has the last couple of days, not even this week, last couple of days have been a massive amount of focus that has been placed on gender-based violence and on the killing of women and raping and so on, just violence against women. And a 42-year-old man was arrested yesterday in connection with the murder of a UCT student. Okay, he hasn't been identified formally, but he faces a charge of rape, murder, defeating the ends of justice. And the rape is quite what makes this one sort of stand out is how brazen the man behaved, and that he lured her into the post office on a very ordinary day, someone going about their business, lures her into the office, bludgeons her to death, and rapes her as well. It's truly, truly frightening stuff. Now, Gretchen, I'd just like to start with you. As the law stands today, do you think that we have enough to combat gender-based violence in femicide? Do we just treat it as an ordinary assault, an ordinary murder? Do we have enough to really target it?
Thank you so much for the question, Zipwan. It's a very important one, I think, especially in the dispensation where we find ourselves now. I cannot divorce myself from the fact that I am a woman and that I'm obviously inclined to not only speak unto the law, but also speak from, you know, the position of my lived experiences.
Now, firstly, the law, I believe that our laws are progressive. I honestly do believe that when one interrogates the intention of the legislature, you will find that the law really, or the act, you know, the legislation in place really seeks to protect victims. And I'm speaking specifically now, looking at the Domestic Violence Act.
Yes.
Really, it's very progressive. And if I could rephrase and say the following, what concerns me, Sibyl, is the fact that, and I'm going out on a limb here, and I'm trying to be very, very, very diplomatic in how I respond, but what concerns me is the fact that, you know, prosecution could be a little bit more robust, could be a little bit more creative,
yes,
in securing, you know, successful convictions. And I speak from the position now of being a defense attorney. I, the things that I've experienced, I found I'm very young in my career. It alarms me from a professional perspective,
yeah,
knowing that women will typically go to the district court, you know, with a protection order in hand, and the charge against the client is having contravened the protection order.
Yeah.
That man leave, because sometimes professionals, you know, colleagues are just too lazy or too overwhelmed, or there's a lot of things happening in the background of their lives, and the focus is mainly on how they can get rid of a matter as opposed to how the matter can be dealt with,
yeah,
effectively. And I'm very, very, very hesitant to say this.
Right. You know, and I understand.
These are my observations, and I'm going to stand by my truth.
Yeah. William, I'd just like to bring you in here. I'm just going to give you an example. I had a matter in court, I won't say which court because that might identify the magistrate, where my client had been threatened, a lady going through a divorce had been threatened with a screwdriver. I couldn't make it there, so I advised my client, quickly run and get a domestic violence interdict so you can collect your things and leave the premises. Client comes back to me crying and saying, but hang on, the magistrate is complaining about the way that I'm dressed. So, I get upset. I get in my car. I leave what I'm doing. I go down to the court, and I say to the magistrate, well, hang on, how can you complain about the way someone is dressed when they've just been thrown out of their home with a screwdriver? And we go back and forth and round. I eventually have to get in one of the senior magistrates because it turns into a screaming match between me and her. And I found that the court was not. That was okay, an extreme case of insensitivity. But I find sometimes that the court is itself not that really cognizant of what really goes on outside. What's your experience?
Look, thank you for having me. Look, in my experience, yes, it does happen in certain circumstances wherein, you know, the court has to, you know, you understand that as much as your client will be having rights, even the person that you are accusing of a certain violation, they also have rights. You know, they are accused, they have rights, they are protected by the Constitution. Mm. So most magistrates, yes, they tend to be very cautious when they deal with such matters, because you find that most of the time they are afraid that it happens that a person goes, runs to the court and seek the court to assist them with a certain aspect, whereas it's a lie. So, you know, it's up to the magistrate to make sure that everything is investigated properly. Mm. Yes, we do have difficulties, and in those circumstances, you know, it is very important to try and get a colleague to actually assist in relation to such matters, because those matters are urgent in nature.
Yeah. I mean, my client was extremely lucky to have an attorney. If she hadn't had an attorney, she wouldn't have got the domestic violence order. Just let me explain something to the listener in terms of a domestic violence interdict so that they don't get confused. When you get a domestic violence interdict, you go to court by yourself, you explain to the judge via a form, an affidavit, and the magistrate then decides whether they're going to give you an interim order or not. If they do give you an interim order, they give you a date to return. If they don't, they just give you both parties a date on which to return. Okay. So the magistrate does have the discretion to grant it with doubts, because the respondent or the person you're accusing will get an opportunity to answer it at a later stage. Okay. So it's not like a criminal case. Just so that the listener understands that a domestic violence interdict is quite a straightforward thing that they can go and do when they need to go and do it. Now, I'll pose this to both of you, but perhaps, William, you can answer this first. What, in your opinion, is really deficient about South African men? Or is it really a South African thing? Because I was speaking to my last guest, and she said our femicide rate is 5 times the rate than the international rate. And I was surprised. I thought it would be higher, 10%, 20%, not 400% higher or 500% higher. What, in your opinion, in your experiences, just as an attorney or just as a man, what is it that drives us to do these things?
Look, let me first answer as a man, not just as an attorney. You know, it's this culture wherein we grew up, you know, in a patriarchal system wherein, you know, as a man, you need to be always, you know, above the woman. You know, everything that you say, it's correct, and the woman has no right to actually counter whatever that you say. You know, we grew up in a culture wherein, you know, violence against women, you know, it was actually permitted. And, you know, as an African man, you find in circumstances wherein there is violence in a family, you find that the family will rather try to deal with it, you know, internally and discourage the woman from going to the police and report these matters. And this has actually created a situation wherein we as men, you know, we have to correct those moral perspective of the past. We need to make sure that now we need to change our behavior and attitude towards women. Talking as an attorney now, it's a very difficult position, because at some stages you find that you are on the opposite. You are presenting the abuser.
Yeah.
Yes, it becomes very difficult. And, you know, we are creatures of instructions, and you do understand that most of the times, if your client tells you that this woman is lying, you know, you look at whatever that is presented before you, and you present the case in accordance to the instructions from the client.
Yes, yes. I mean, that's your professional obligation to do what you can.
Definitely, definitely. We have that professional obligation. Then, under those circumstances, you find that the justice system is the one that mostly fails the women. You know, from the time they go to the police station and report this matter, the way that they are treated at the police stations, the way that they are treated, you know, as victims during the preparation of these matters, you find that some prosecutors are not well, you know, trained to be in a position to can actually deal with such matters wherein a female is involved. And the women, they lose their confidence in the justice system.
Yeah. Yes.
You know, recently, I'm sure you were listening, I think it was last week or so, where in the case of the case between Arthur and Sisi Mafokati.
He was acquitted of all charges.
Yes. And, you know, I'm sure, you know, even those other women who actually had a belief that, you know, there will be justice in the justice system, they will lose confidence in that.
And I'm not saying he's guilty, but he also used the age-old tactic of counter.
Yes.
Counter charge.
Yes. Yeah. I'm lucky to have been involved in that matter at some stage wherein I was representing the victim in this matter. Yes, but be that as it may, you know, at some stage I remember there was a complaint which was made by the complainant in the matter where Arthur Mafokati was acquitted. The complaint was in relation to how the prosecutor was handling the matter. The complaint was raised internally was dealt with internally. That same prosecutor that she complained about continued representing the state in that matter. So you understand that this thing is deep-rooted
yeah.
to the extent that...
I mean, it's a failing system where if the complainant can complain formally about the prosecutor and really nothing happens, it's problematic. But let's bring Gretchen back into the conversation. I'm sorry, we don't want to leave you out. Gretchen, what gives, I know you're speaking from a female point of view, but what is it that you notice about South African men which gives them the gall to be able to sort of do what they want, when they want, and how they want? Of course, it's not all South African men, but it's enough that, if there were five times the femicide rate, something's wrong with South African men in general. Even the ones that don't actually do, something's going on with us.
Definitely, we're sitting with a crisis on our hands. And, therefore, I want to be allowed, if possible, to speak frankly. We are in trouble as a species in South Africa. It's not a matter of who will escape and who will not. It's literally a matter of who's next. That's the general prognosis and the general sentiment of women from all walks of life, from all racial backgrounds, etc. in South Africa currently, because seemingly nothing is being done to aid us. I was part of a team last year. Went as far as Pretoria, where we were successful in bringing the first of its kind within South Africa and within Africa a gender summit, gender-based violence summit in South Africa. The president obviously called for it. In fact, we called for the president, sanctioned it. We went, and the president came out and addressed us. And even during his address, violence was being meted out so arrogantly by his security team upon the bodies of women or against the bodies of women who were silently protesting, saying that we are done with the rhetoric, we are over the promises that we know will amount to naught, we are here to keep you accountable, Mr. President, we are here to keep you and the team you lead accountable.
Because
to answer your question,
sorry. Okay, carry on.
Thank you, Zippo. And to answer your question, I'm going to try and summarize the sentiment of all women across the country. You are correct in saying that it is not all men, but not all men at this point is not assisting us.
Yeah.
We are still dying. We are not able to even identify, who is a not all men and who is an all men cohort at this stage. Men don't walk around with identifying tags so that we are able to make necessary precautions or take the necessary precautions and protect ourselves. It saddens me that men try to derail the conversation, the very necessary and urgent conversation that women are trying to establish in terms of what are we going to do with this crisis, because the remedy is simple, therefore, if I can put it like this, the remedy is very simple. Men should not rape, men should not rob, men should not assault, men should not abuse, men should not murder. It's that simple. I make the following example I made it just today, and I said to a man who was talking to me and saying to me, yeah, but it's not all men. And I said to him, in fact, he said women must assist society in decreasing the stats. And I said, I refuse to. And you cannot ask me as a victim to assist my perpetrator in not accosting me, in not harming me. That is the worst insult you could ever give a woman at this particular, this very cursed time. I said to him, my brothers and I grew up in the same house. How is it that I, as a woman, know not to harm a man, not to cause any form of violence towards a man or any human being for that matter, but they do not know that we were raised in the same house, born of the same principle. And now I have to go the extra mile in my state as a victim, and then I have to prepare a platform and educate you on how not to cause harm to me. That is insulting as it is a no.
Yeah.
So I'm going to state categorically that I don't think there's anything wrong with men other than that they are assisted by some of the laws in this country and they are assisted by the patriarchal system by which our country and our laws are governed. Mm. They know that they can get away with you know, murder, as it were. Look at the accused person in the UCT student matter. He has a previous conviction of robbery aggravated, and then...
Yeah, which is a very, quite a serious conviction, that
exactly.
one.
Exactly.
Yeah, and it involves violence.
Exactly. Yeah. Also the matter that he was, he had a rape charge against him, a rape allegation against him, which was subsequently withdrawn
at a later stage.
That are
stage,
unknown yeah. at this stage. The point being that this man knew he has experience of having caused harm, and I'm going to assume that especially in looking at the rape charge against him, I'm not going to assume. I'm going to state categorically that this man has had previous run-ins with the law. Yeah. He knows what was at stake, and he still went ahead and did what he did to that student. He knew it. He knew the consequences. But this is the brazenness of men in South Africa. They know that
nothing is going to happen to me.
Exactly.
Yeah, I can do it now.
I'm actually emotional right now.
I can hear the emotion in your voice. I hear today and yesterday a lot of people calling on the president, on the minister of this and that, police or the premier to make a statement, come out and say something, which is of course understandable. And it's necessary because there should be a sense of leadership, a sense of this is something that we can get under control. But how much self-autonomy, how much of the president, the premier can't be there behind every young lady who walks home from varsity or from school. Can't be, yeah. How
and
much
I don't
self-autonomy?
Trust
Yeah, but
I don't trust them because this is the same presidency or the same leadership who had come out and said that we must not. Apologies, people.
Oh, no problem.
Leadership. This is the same leadership who came out and sat there and said women must ensure that they are not victims. We must ensure that we do not become victims, as opposed to saying, no, men must not rape, men must not kill. They are literally turning it around again and looking at the victim
yeah.
to further try and find, you know, come up with a solution to a problem that we did not create. We did not start this pandemic.
Hmm.
But it is expected of us to not only to put our trauma aside and to actively help find a solution.
Yeah, your words are really, it's tough to hear them, it really is.
Yeah.
William, I just wanted to ask you, perhaps what I was alluding to is self-autonomy. I can look at government for a lot of things, but as a man, do I expect government to be telling me how to behave? Is it really fair? I appreciate that the government must be able to punish or to control situations and to deal with perpetrators. But in order for me not to be a perpetrator in the beginning, am I asking government to do too much?
No, it's not. Look, the government create legislation to ensure that the citizens behave. Look, it is expected of the government to create such legislation.
Mm.
And it is not asking for too much because without the law...
Hi, William, perhaps could you move a little bit because there's a lot of background noise there. We don't know what that is.
Do you hear me now?
Yes.
Yes. I was just saying that, the law, that the legislation is the one that will actually determine a person's behavior. Because, if there was no rule of law, then everyone would have been able to do as they please.
Mm.
So the law has to be strengthened to ensure that, everyone in South Africa is treated equally. Everyone who walks on the street late at night, they feel safe. In their comfort of their homes, they feel safe. You know, we need those laws. Hence, even now, the government is trying to introduce laws wherein, you know, the ARTO bill, which has been passed, which has been introduced to the legislature. It has not been passed yet. It's not law yet. But those laws are there to govern our people. You can see the level of fatalities on the road, which lead to many accidents.
Mm.
So these laws are there for a reason. Without laws, there will be anarchy in South Africa.
Yeah, they can be a useful tool in correcting behavior.
Yes, definitely.
I'm afraid we're almost out of time. William, I don't think you and me perhaps should speak too much. I'd like to hand it back. To Gretchen. Gretchen, would you give us some parting words?
Thank you, Sipo. And I would like to agree with William that the rule of law is very, very necessary, very vital, for functional society. Further, as I said earlier, I'm overcome by emotion, simply because, as I said in the beginning, I cannot divorce who I am, you know, as by profession, from who I am by nature. This gender was given to me, it was assigned to me by chance, and there is nothing that I can do. And all I can ask right now is to plead with men across South Africa, and if many men are going to hear the sound of my voice, to take note, to be cognizant, to introspect, to interrogate yourself, and do your bit in your friendship circle. Call out men who are making themselves guilty. Don't laugh and don't call it boys being boys, because boys being boys are killing women, are mass murdering, you know, mothers of children, are killing children even. Innocent people are suffering. Further, do your bit in society. Make the circle, literally as it were, bigger. We have the law to guide us. And I believe strongly that we can reach a state where the GBV statistics decrease drastically, but it's going to take a concerted effort from mainly men to do their part.
Thank you
so much for allowing me to talk.
No, we appreciate you and your time. Good night to both of you.
Okay, good night.
Bye. Thank you. Good night.
Well, there you have it. Our half of our nation is in pain. Half of our nation is in fear. Half of our nation doesn't know not if they're going to become a victim, but when they're going to become a victim. If we're honest, your mother, your sister, your daughter, your wife, is it only a matter of time before she becomes the next victim of a rape or of a murder? I couldn't have summed it up better than our guests have done, so I won't even try. I'd like to thank you for listening. You can always follow us again on @VowFM using the hashtag LawFocus. The other hashtag is VowTurns9. If you missed the show, podcasts can be found at fits.journalism.co.za/law and on iTunes as LawFocus. I'd like to thank all of my guests for their contribution tonight, and in particular the Gretchen, as well as our former guest as well. From our producer, Simba Honde, our technical producer, Kutlwana Serame, our Law Focus researchers, Sesetu Zingelwa, Anelka Mamate, Sipati Munana, and from me, Tsapo Mohapi, thank you and good night.
Law Focus on Vaalfam 88.1, point of information. Law Focus Podcast.